This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk, the May 4, 2017 edition. Above average investing for the average investor is what we're all about. This is our 1 hour to open a dialogue. Maybe talk about retirement portfolios, how to manage money, what stocks to buy and sell. We get a lot of individual stock questions, but any money matters is open for discussion. I invite your calls. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is our listener line. You can call it right now. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, we're going to talk about how much time you have to invest to properly manage your investments. How much time you have to properly manage your investment. How much time do you need? That's going to be one of our talking points. With money market interest rates still barely above zero, we all know that many investors may be tempted to reach for higher yields. We all want higher yields. So one might first look to the bond market to find some corporate issues maybe that pay something more substantial. Corporate bonds are issued by companies and are either publicly traded or private. Bond rating services at Standard & Poor's, Moody's and Fitch, they calculate the risk. They rate these bottoms, AAA, Double A, single A, A plus, Bs, triple B, B, on, down, down, down. So they're supposed to tell us how good, really supposed to tell you what the ability, how good is the ability of the corporate bond to get pay back you when you buy the bond. That's what those ratings are supposed to do. Mind you, some of the highest ratings were some of the, just before the financial crisis. Some of the highest ratings that these institutions gave went bust. So they're not always right. So for the average investor, there's a lot of danger here. Analyzing debt obligation, the company's ability to meet their financial needs to pay those debt obligations. How do you analyze that? You got to look at balance sheets. You got to look at all kinds of things that might be difficult for you. Maybe instead of corporate bonds, maybe you do municipal bonds or some other bonds. Well, do you think they don't have risk? Have you read anything about the Puerto Rican bonds? They filed for bankruptcy on all their bonds issued by Puerto Rico. Remember, Puerto Rico is that? I think Puerto Rico is a territory of the U.S. I don't know it's one of those things. Defaulted on all of them. Bank put them in receivership. So if you got a Puerto Rican bond, a municipal bond, you may not get your money, or you're going to get pennies on the dollars or 50 cents on the dollar. Who knows? But you're going to get a lot less than they were worth. And I had clients. I had a client, I should say, who was very pro Puerto Rican bonds. And she disagreed with me when I said, I think they're too risky. This was years ago. I said, I think they're too risky. You might be getting a lot of money for them, but I think they're too risky. And she was convinced they were not. Well, look at it now. You got to be careful when you buy bonds. Bonds are can be just as risky as stocks. Don't think they're not. Corporate bonds get much more risky in a recession, obviously. So be very, very careful. Now, one of the dangers besides the company going business bankrupt is maybe you should think about, if we're looking for yields, maybe you should look for dividends. And maybe dividends of corporations. Because, why? Dividends might pay less than bonds, but you also have the possibility of the stock going up. And, of course, going down, too. But if you buy big blue chip stocks, you can be pretty darn, I don't want to use the word safe, pretty well protected. Okay? Is Johnson & Johnson going to go out of business? Is ExxonMobil going to go out of business? Is AT&T going to go out of business? They all pay nice dividends. Chances are pretty slim. They could. Anyways, how to get more yield? That's pretty difficult. Do you have questions about corporate bonds or municipal bonds or any kind of bonds or any money questions for that matter? Our Rest Talk listener line is open, 888-99-CHART. But let's check in with our 24-hour listener line for questions that came in between programs.
Paul from Sydney, Australia. This is on the podcast. And the question is, does a 200-day moving average apply to ETFs? And do you use a weekly or a daily 200-day moving average? Thanks.
The answer is yes. An exchange-traded fund follows an index or sector or groupings of stocks normally. And the 200-day moving average is a long-term average. We're talking about technical analysis, not fundamental. And if the 200-day moving average is where you generally look at, remember, 200 days is 200 trading days. So that's like a whole year. And 365 days because of the weekends and things. So 200 days is your long-term average, and many people use those to indicate a bear and bull market. Anything above that and below that, you know, for the indexes. Of course, we've been above it for some time. So yes, they will apply to ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Good question. Appreciate it. Thank you for listening there out there in Australia. Yeah, that's neat. Malachi in San Jose. How you doing, Malachi?
Hey, how are you? This is actually Malachi from San Jose. Quick question. Can you explain options trading and what are the pros and cons of it?
I am not an options trader. I can give you some rudimentary understanding. Options give you the right to buy or sell a equity at a certain price over a certain length of time. Most options expire the third Friday of each month. Most. So when you buy an option, that gives you the right to buy or sell usually 100 share, one option is 100 shares at a certain price of those stocks. So you get 30 days to exercise the option. Now, you can buy or sell the option. And options are a lot more risky. They're a lot more risky than stocks. But you can also, it uses a lot of leverage because it doesn't cost a lot to buy a 100 share option. It doesn't cost a lot. So let's say you want to buy an option to have someone put the stock. There's put options and the calls. Okay, I don't know if we want to get into more details on that because it gets pretty complex pretty quick. But there's different kinds of options. Put options, call options are the most common. So I would suggest going to investopedia.com if you want to get some more, you know, understanding. It takes years to learn to become a good options trader, by the way. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Robert Arnott said, in investing, what is comfortable is rarely profitable. But how much risk should you have to take to achieve your investment goals, your retirement goals? How much risk? Want to talk about risk? No one likes to talk about it because it's so nebulous, but risk is extremely important. 888-99-CHART is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. So how much time should you invest in learning how to invest? Now, for me, it's a lifetime. I love it. So I've been doing it forever. But that's going to be one of our main talking points today. Okay? How much time should you invest in learning how to invest? Also, I want to talk about the CAP ratio. C-A-P-E, CAP. And the CAP stands for Cyclical Adjusted P-E Ratio. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about also mortgage rates. Mortgage rates, we haven't talked about that in some time. I haven't really been an interesting subject. But, I always worry that if we don't touch on things that are no longer in the news, that we'll lose touch with those things, and they're important. And finally, I want to talk about the economic calendar this week. We've had a pretty full economic calendar. And what are some of the statistics saying about the economy? Now, last week, we got the GDP numbers for the first quarter. It was 0.7% growth, which is very, poor in a growing economy. Poor for the first quarter of 2017. It's just not good. So what are the numbers coming out for March and April? What are we seeing? That's what we're going to talk about. Those are the things I think are going to be interesting to discuss. The market was kind of flat today. The Dow was down 6. The Nasdaq was up 3. And the S&P was up 1. Can't get much more than that. And I wrote about a market commentary today about the calmness of investors. When investors get very, very calm, and that's what you're seeing. You have been seeing this for some time. It makes me more and more nervous. Does not make me feel calm. Does not. I just don't feel comfortable with this lack of volatility, the lack of concern about events going around the world, in our economy, in our country, politically, as well as economically. We're just way too calm about these things. So I think it's something we should get to be a little bit concerned. We really should. Let's go back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is the number.
Hey, guys. Just wondering what you guys think about oil right now, what you think it's going to be doing, and also if a USO is the best ETF for tracking oil prices. I just reestablished a position but wanted to know if now is a good time to put some more money into oil. Thank you.
Well, I like to buy oil when the prices are low, and it's pretty low. It's been coming down, fell sharply. And therefore, USO, United States Oil Fund, exchange traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the short price of West Texas Intermediate Light Sweet Crude. Okay, that's what this ETF does. It checks the price of oil in Texas. Okay, and so you buy these things, you buy this kind of thing when you think oil is really down low. You think it's at a low. Now, when you're looking at this, looking at a chart of USO, it looks like it's getting awful close to near the bottom at $9.46. It hit that bottom. It hit the bottom of $9.25 in August, and then $9.50 in November, bounced up. The top, the high point, has been $11.80, not quite 12, but close to it. So that's been the range it's been stuck in. So if you're going to play the range, you buy it here, $9.46, and sell it at $11.50, $12. That's the hope. So at this price, I think it looks pretty attractive. Now, can it go much lower? Yes, it can go down to the lowest it's been is about $8, USO. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So how much time do you have to spend learning investing? You don't have to spend hardly any time. You do not. If you're going to be an index investor, you're going to buy an index and hold it, you don't have to spend any time. If you're a long-term investor, you can just hold it forever. If you want to pick stocks, if you want to pick ETFs and sectors, then you're going to have to spend a lot more time, not only on stocks, but also on the economy. It depends on how interested you are. Depends on how much you want to manage risk of your portfolio. This is the Mess Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley, 888-99-CHART. How to reach me right now? You can call me anytime you want, but we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. That number is good, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Any money questions, welcome right now. So back to what I was talking about before the break, how much time you need to spend in investing. Well, again, it depends on how much interest you have. How if you want to buy stocks, you're going to have to spend a lot of time. I mean, hours. I spend most of my days doing this. But for you as a layperson, you're going to have to spend hours doing it every week. I mean, 5 to 10 hours a week. If you're going to buy individual stocks, first you got to research the stocks themselves. When you're going to buy them, and then you got to keep track of them to see if anything changes. So the time you spend can be quite extensive. Now, many people buy stocks and just ignore them. There are certain core holdings that you can do that with, but before you buy them, make sure you buy them right. And you got to determine what is a core holding. I mean, if someone calls me up, I'm going to buy, ABC company or whatever your company, and it's not a big blue chip company and they think it's a core holding, well, then you have to learn what a core holding is. A core holding is, you know, the stocks I listed earlier, like Johnson & Johnson and Exxon Mobil and AT&T. Those are core holdings. The core holding is not some tech company that, you know, startup. No, it's not a core holding. So you really have to do some research. And if you're going to buy and hold core holdings, you got to still do a lot of research up front. Coca-Cola. I mean, there's many, many of them. Most of the Dow 30 are core type holdings. Okay, so just it depends on how much interest you have in the market. You don't have to do it. You can buy index funds. Let's go ahead and go to James in New York. He wants to talk about international trading. How you doing, James? I appreciate the call.
Good. And yourself? How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I wanted to ask a question. Say there's a company that trades on the Australian Stock Exchange.
Okay.
Also trades on the over-the-counter gray market stock exchange here in the U.S.
Pink
if
sheets?
I would say gray over-the-counter bulletin board.
Okay.
Gray market. Is that, I don't know if that's the same as pink sheets.
That's
I think
pink
it's a little
sheets.
Different.
Yeah, okay.
So whatever the case, say I own shares of that company under the ticker that it trades over-the-counter in the U.S., and then that company was to go IPO on the NASDAQ. Would that, I would like to know, would that be considered owning pre-IPO shares, or is any, for any reason, is that considered owning private equity, being it does not trade in the U.S. currently? And what does that mean if you owned a company like that that went IPO under
those
circumstances?
I don't think that happens, because remember, it's already existing. It's existing in Australia, and it's already existing here. And IPO means initial public offering. Well, it's already offered. So what would normally happen, it would get off the pink sheets, or gray market, as you call it, by going to NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange by becoming an ADR, American Depository Receipt. And so it wouldn't come in as an IPO. And what that means is that they would, a big bank like JP Morgan or Chase or somebody would sponsor the stock, and they would buy millions of shares from the foreign corporation. They would hold it and repackage those shares as ADRs to the public on our exchange. That's how that would work. It wouldn't go IPO. Then what would happen is if you had the pink sheets, those you would get exchanged into an ADR shares.
And would those shares be at a ratio of like 40-1? I read somewhere the number 40-1.
It depends on it could be. It could be 10-1, 40-1, it could be 100-1, depending on how they package them as an ADR. Okay.
Okay.
And it could
so
be 1-1 too.
That they would
James.
Be ordinary shares.
Yeah. Okay, so it can happen, especially if it's a good sized company and they want to be listed on our exchange. A lot of reasons they don't want to be listed is because they gotta follow some stringent rules on our exchanges that they have on our exchanges, and they don't want to do all the filing and all the paperwork that's encompassed. They don't feel a need to do it. Good question, James. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. It wouldn't be an IPO, though, initial public offering of an existing company. It would a foreign company. It would be a sponsored ADR here. That's how that would work. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Any questions you might have on your mind, I'd love to talk about. We're going to talk about the cap ratio in the next half hour. Cap, that means cyclical adjusted PE. We're going to talk about that. Mortgage rates And then the economic calendar of this week. Those are things we're going to discuss before the end of the show. I'm hoping to get to them. The market's flat today. Dow down 6, NASDAQ up 3, and S&P up 1. Our idea about Invest Talk is that you do some of the talking. So let's hear from you. Let's hear your money questions. I want to hear them. Our number is 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
If you'd like to see more about KPP Financial's select portfolios, like our balanced income portfolio, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Many portfolios are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP Financial program that fits your goals and life situation today. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners, and there's no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-to-one meeting with Steve on Skype or telephone, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's get back to the podcast. Invest Talk continues on this Thursday. On our Friday Invest Talk, you can speed up their learning curve. You can steer them away from potentially costly mistakes. 7 steps toward financial literacy for your children. That's next time, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We're still ready for your call today. Any money question, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. So, cap ratios. Cyclical adjusted PE ratio is at 29 right now. 29. Remember, this is the Shiller PE. If you've heard me talk about it, I'm sure you have if you've been a listener. Shiller PE. And what it does is it takes like 10 years of earnings, of corporate earnings going back, and averages them out and then applies the PE ratio of the S&P today using that average earnings. And at 29, that's pretty high, okay? Pretty darn high. So a study was conducted looking at the cap ratio when it gets to be 29. And what does the market do up to 10 years up to getting to 29 and 10 years after it's hit 29? Now, the problem with the statistics I'm going to give you is that it hasn't hit 29 very often. So it's not like you got 100 or 150 to 500 data sets. You don't have that. You just have a handful of data sets because it does not get above 29 very often. It never has. But when the cap ratio is greater than 29, the 10-year return on the market after that, after it's hit 29, is 1.6%, while the return looking backwards, previous 10 years to get to the high ratio is up 16%. When the cap ratio is less than 29, looking forward, the return is 9.9%, and looking backward, it's 8.9%. So what is this telling us? What is this stat telling you, if you can rely on it? And that's a big if, by the way, everybody. Please do not fall in love with this stat, because there's just not enough data points to make it valid. But it is educational. It is revealing. It's telling us that when the market's really, really overvalued on a cap ratio, cyclical adjusted PE ratio, the returns going forward are not very good. They're still returns, but they're not very good. To get to 29, if you've been in the market, you've had very good returns. Okay, and you can figure that out. What, since 2008, when the recession ended 2009, we've had very good returns in the market. When the cap ratio is below and just average or lower, then your returns going forward are pretty decent. They're average. When I say average, I mean the S&P 500 average, which is, 9-10%. So if it's at 29 now, it's saying that, man, the market is kind of overvalued. That's what it's saying to me. Doesn't mean you get out of the market, because no one can time the market. And as I said, we're not, this is not a statistic you can rely on. This is just one of the data points you take into consideration and say, should I buy this high risk stock or maybe sit on my cash? Well, cash is king. Let's go to Larry in Oakland. How you doing, Larry?
Yeah, well, I have a question about dividends.
Uh-huh.
I would like to know, is a dividend based on the value of the stock at the ex-dividend day?
When you say based on, are you talking about...
The dollar value, the...
Yeah, dividend is expressed in dollars and cents. It says, okay, we're going to pay a 50 cents a share on the ex-dividend date. That's what they're saying.
Okay. But let's say the dividend happens to be at $200 on that day, and the day before that, it was at $190. Is it based on the fair market at that X day?
Okay. The dividend is not based on what the price of the stock is at all. It's not.
It isn't.
No. The dividends is a certain amount of money, a dollar or whatever it is per share, whatever they declare. They, meaning the president, CEO, board of directors, whatever they declare the dividend, they declare it in dollars and cents. We're going to pay a dollar per share. Doesn't matter what the price of the share is, we're still going to pay a dollar per share.
Okay, so the share can be anything.
Yes.
The share could be $3.
Yes. Yes. The shares could be $1,000 a share. The shares could be $10 a share. They are saying we're going to pay a dollar a share. Now, where you might be getting confused, Larry, is a lot of times in my industry, the dividend is expressed in percentage. Oh, it's 5% dividend. And that is based on the share price. Okay? So, for instance, if it's a $10 stock and they're going to pay a dollar dividend, that's 10% dividend, right?
Yeah.
Right? So it's a 10% dividend yield on a $10 stock. They decided to pay a dollar. But what if that stock goes to $20? Now it's a 5% dividend yield. You see how that works?
Okay. It's a little bit more involved than I thought.
Yeah, it is. Most people get confused.
I hear you. I understand. I appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you, Larry. I do appreciate the call. And I guarantee many people are, confused. Just remember, the dividend, when it's declared, is always declared in dollars and cents, how much per share they're going to pay. And the ex-dividend date is the date that they, if you own the stock on that day, that's the day they're going to pay it. And you'll get it if you own the stock on that day. Let's go to Jay in Fremont. How you doing, Jay?
Fine, thank you, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Steve, last time I asked you whether I should buy Target, and it was in the downward trend. Now it is coming back up. Is it a good time to buy now?
Yes. I like it. I like that it finally is bottomed. It looks like it bottomed. It's moved up. It's broke up above the 50-day moving average. And I think this is where you start to buy it. You buy it now. It was at what, $53, $54? Now it's at $57. I think it's a good time to buy it.
All right. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You're welcome. Appreciate the call. Target, everybody. TGT. And everybody knows who Target is. And they finally started to recover. They've been down, down, down. And this is what I say when I say, why don't you wait till it starts? You don't know where the bottom is when it's falling. We don't know. So you want to buy it when it bounces a little bit. Now, don't think that you always are going to make it keep going up from this bounce. It could turn right back down and go down. But you have improved your odds dramatically if it's already put in a bottom and it looks like that's the bottom. Double bottoms, triple bottoms, and coming up from those things are very strong as far as technical analysis. Remember, technical analysis just tends to be true. Doesn't always true, just tends to be true. So yeah, this would be where you would want to buy target. If you want to buy a nice core holding that pays a 4.2% dividend yield and a stock that's underpriced, well, Target would be one of those stocks you would want. How much risk is in your retirement portfolio right now? How much risk? Risk is essential to growing a portfolio. It's also part of the reasons why you can lose money and make money. The more risk you take, the more chances of losses and gains. So how much risk is comfortable to you? So you can take our free risk analysis quiz. It's pretty short. It only takes a few minutes. It'll help you understand how much risk you feel comfortable taking. If you like, and if you send me your portfolio, I will put that on the computer and the same software and we'll get a risk score for that. So we'll get a risk score for you, how much risk between 0 and 100, and a risk score for your portfolio. And you can see if you're taking the risk you're comfortable with in your portfolio. It's free to do this. Go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Now, our Invest Talk Insiders program is a source for up-to-the-minute news. Today on Insider News, understanding social impact bonds, the best mutual funds with clean shares, how to manage money as a freelancer, parent cosigners beware, think twice before taking on your child's college debt. And there's plenty more where those came from. Join up now, become an insider. It's free, and it's a source of news 24 hours a day. Just go to investtalk.com, select the Invest Talk tab, and then Invest Talk Insider.
Hi Steve, this is Manoj. I have a question for Southwestern Energy Stock, the symbol S as in Sam, W as in Western, N as in Nancy, SWN. Is it the right time to buy this stock? Thank you. Bye.
Well, it certainly looks like it's trying to put it in the bottom, just like Target we were talking about the other. SWN is Southwest Energy, engaged in exploration production of oil and natural gas, primarily in Arkansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and Pennsylvania. But it broke below the support today. It has not shown us, it looks like it's double bottom, but it broke below that double bottom today. I have a feeling it's getting awful close and it's awful inexpensive. Earnings are going to be 90 cents a share next year. It's a $7.02 stock. That means it's an 9 PE. Eight. That's low. Now, this is a stock with risk because there's lots of debt, and that's where I would worry. There's a lot of risk in this stock. So I would the debt issue is what you really need to investigate, really. That's really what you want to know. Why are you carrying so much debt? And maybe we should get rid of some of that debt. But it's close. I would say you want to wait till it breaks above the 50-day moving average. And that's at like $7.70. It's $7.02 now. Wait till you kind of want some strength. You want some strength. You might want to wait till it breaks above $8. You want to see strength coming in. SWN. Okay. Okay. How about mortgage rates? Have you been in the market recently? Mortgage rates right now are 4.02% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. 4.02. That's the lowest it's been this year, 2017. Now remember, the Fed has raised rates twice to 1%. But the mortgage rates at 4.02 is the lowest it's been. It was the low last year was 3.5%, and the high, that was like back in November, 3.5%. And the high was 4.25 made like right around January 1st, 4.25. Now it's 4.02, so it's gone back down while the Fed has raised rates. See how the Fed does not control rates? It only raises the short-term overnight rate of money they lend to banks. But banks compete with each other out there, and they can lower and raise their mortgage rates or any rates they want, their commercial lending rates, any rates they want. They can do whatever they want. The Fed does not control the interest rates. Supply and demand, competition, that controls. Economic conditions, that controls. So What we're saying is that even though the Fed's raising rates, and that means pressure is on to increase rates by the banks, they're not doing it for whatever reason, competition mostly. And there's the inventory, housing inventory is pretty tight still, pretty tight. So it's just interesting. And of course, that means the housing market is still rolling along at pretty decent rates for people who want to buy housing. And remember, I've talked about it before, millennials have been avoiding buying houses for some time. Well, maybe they're starting to get attracted into the market as they get older, starting to put families together. Very interesting. But mortgage rates are pretty low, and the Fed's still on track to continue to raise rates this year. We'll see. That just means there'll be more pressure for mortgage rates to go up. Time for Invest Talk 101, a lesson in everyday investing. Let's quiz you first. It is important to not only understand how to analyze fundamentals of individual stocks, but to also understand economic fundamentals that affect the direction, the future direction of business activity. So how can you measure that? The answer is there are a few ways to do it. Calculate gross domestic product, GDP. But the simplest calculation involves four factors: consumption, investment, government spending, and net exports. Those four things: consumption, investment, government spending, and net exports. The largest component of GDP is the U.S. is consumer consumption. Income trends, savings rates, wealth effect, personal balance sheets, confidence, etc. Personal consumer consumption. All affect how much consumers spend. Remember, that's what our economy, 66% of what the consumers do. Also, the investment component has a lot to do with the business confidence. Business go out and spend money on buildings, software upgrades, factory upgrades, and equipment, and they haven't been spending that money. Government spending is fairly self-explanatory, right? Government spends money, that also boosts the economy. The final component has to do with export and imports. We export or import more. We are an importer by far. Our balance is really off kilter, and that deducts from our GDP growth when we import a lot more than we export. Remember, Trump is complaining about that, wants to, get that balance of trade better. Interesting stuff, huh? I love this stuff. You're listening to Invest Talk. You help us keep it real. You keep me real on what you're interested in. So give me a call, 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Jack in Fremont. How you doing, Jack?
Great, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question on 529 plans and the funds that should go into investing into those. Does it matter if we take fresh money from existing bank accounts and start dollar cost averaging into 529, or take the gains that I might have had from other investments, which are also post-tax, and offset those gains and start putting those into 529 plans? Does it really matter from a tax perspective?
Well, not from a tax perspective where the money comes from, but any money grown in the 529 is not taxed, the growth of the money. So it's more important that you put as much as you can up front so that 529 has more time to grow. Let's say your child, it's better to invest in a 529 when the child is very young than if they're, 10, 11, 12. It's better 1, 2, and 3, as much as you can up front, because there's a lot more time to grow. But where the money comes from to get into the 529 plan, it only matters as, should you take it? You don't want to take it out of tax-deferred accounts like IRAs or anything. You can't do that. But other than that, it doesn't really matter where it comes from, tax-wise.
Okay, thank you. So if I do have a Vanguard index fund, which I've been investing dollar-cost averaging, let's say, but that's not in a retirement account, it's okay to take the gains from that and start putting it into the 529 plan. It shouldn't really matter.
Correct. It shouldn't.
Okay.
Shouldn't really matter.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling, Jack. Appreciate it. Roby, how you doing, Roby?
Hey, I'm doing good.
How you going? Thanks for calling.
Hey, I have a question regarding the ticker symbol NVDA. When to sell and is it good to hold?
NVIDIA. NVIDIA Corporation designs graphic processing units used in personal computers, workstations, game consoles, and mobile devices. Graphic processing units is what they do. They are a $62 billion company. They're not small. They are big. Okay, it's at $103.85. They're going to make $3.36 next year. So that tells you the P/E ratio is around 30 plus. That tells you that it's a little bit on the expensive side, but the growth rate has been pretty sharp lately. Sales growth has been increasing, and it was last quarter it was up 55%. That's a really strong growth rate. The stock has moved sideways for all the last since all year, just kind of been meandering sideways, and probably because it's expensive. If you owned it, I'd hold on to it till maybe it broke below about 95. Is that 103? Because that's where it's hit a couple of times recently in March and April and bounced up. If it broke below that, I might go ahead and take profits on a technical basis. So that's where I would sell it. Where to buy it? I'd wait for a market pullback. And wherever this pulled back because of the overall market and then started up again, that I'd buy it there. That's where I'd buy it. I would hope that it'd be in the mid-70s. That's where I would love to buy it if I could. Okay, Ruby?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. NVDA is a symbol, NVIDIA Corporation. Good, solid company. Very little debt. I do like the company. Good, solid company. The economic calendar was very full this week. A lot of economic statistics. We're going to get the jobs report tomorrow for April. Remember, the ADP, which is a private sector jobs report, said that we produced 177,000 new jobs. And you got to remember, that's from the month before, we only produced 98,000. The expectation is for 190,000. Remember, ADP does not count public jobs, just private sector jobs. So the estimate is for 190,000. That's a lot more than it was the month before. We'll see. ISM, Institute of Supply Management, that was down. That's for the manufacturing sector of the ISM and up for the non-manufacturing. Personal income was up 0.2. They expected it to be up 0.3. Spending was flat. They expected it to be up 0.1, and it was flat like it was the month before. Construction spending was down 2%. Productivity for the quarter was down 0.6%. They expected it to be flat. The quarter before, it was up 1.8. Very bad productivity number. Factory orders up 0.2. They expected it to be up 0.5. And the month before was up 1.2%. These are not good numbers. These are all weak numbers except for the ISM. But most experts think there's going to be a bounce in those numbers. Hours up. I thank you for listening to and joining in today. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. I will get back to you, I promise. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, from president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor. For Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening to us. Listen to me, I appreciate it. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.